The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
Welcome to a Tuesday. I am Nicole Sandler, coming to you live from NicoleSandler.com, from the Progressive Voices Network, on TuneIn, on, Facebook Live, Twitch, and Twitter. Still not on YouTube and probably won't be until the end of June. Thank you very much. But it is what it is. We roll with the punches here. Today's Tuesday, and for the last, 10 years or more, my Tuesdays had been booked because Gotta Laugh is usually here on Tuesdays. And but she's out for the last few weeks and probably for a few more weeks because she's dealing with something with her hands. Tendonitis, or who knows what it is. She's working on it. She's trying to get around it, but she's still not there. So we are bearing with her. And today, instead of Laffy, we're going to hang out with Desi Doyen. So, you know, I'm like the regular guest host for the broadcast. Brad Friedman of Brad Blog and Desi Doyen are good friends of mine. And Brad's been on this program many times. Desi has been on a few times, but not as often as she should have been. And today, well, there's a lot of stuff happening around climate change. Most notably, last week, President Biden convened this global climate change summit, a virtual summit with world leaders. And I thought, how about bringing Desi on? So sure enough, Desi joins us today. And I'm warning you, we actually taped it a few hours ago because right now, and I can attest to this, having filled in on the broadcast, their show is, it's also an hour long. There's a method to my madness. There's a reason that I do this show live every day, because you get it warts and all. But if you pre-tape it, if it's a pre-recorded show, if it's not done live, excuse me, you want everything to be perfect. And so, therefore, it's a lot more time consuming. So their show takes really a full day to put together. This show does, too. I have all the pieces in place, and we try to throw it all out there and do it live. Do it live, damn it! We haven't heard that in a while, have we? I may have to whip that out one of these days. Anyway, sorry, I'm prevaricating, I think. I don't know. Sometimes I use words that I don't know what they mean. Anyway, I'm wasting time here when I shouldn't, because I recorded that with Desi earlier today and it's long. So we got a lot of stuff to get to. And we will in a moment. But I want to start with, there's news. Let me give you the latest, afternoon news dump news. And the big one is, I was waiting for it this morning and I couldn't hold off on producing what's news until the new mask guidelines came out. And it's not so much mask guidelines. It's new guidelines for people who have been vaccinated. And yes, I'm fully vaccinated. I got my two Moderna shots. I'm past the 2 weeks after the second dose. So I'm pretty much good to go. So you want to know what I can do now? Hold on. Let me put this graphic up on the screen. For those of you who are watching a video, this is the new, basically the guidelines for what you can do if you have been vaccinated and what you shouldn't be doing if you haven't been. So basically, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has this new guidance. Fully vaccinated people can unmask outdoors if they are walking, running, hiking, or biking alone, or with members of their household. The fully vaccinated can also go mask-free while dining at an outdoor restaurant with friends from multiple households. The new outdoor mask recommendations were announced, today. Let's see. You can also, if you're vaccinated, take off your masks at small outdoor gatherings with fully vaccinated family and friends, or where there's a mixture of fully vaccinated and unvaccinated people. But those people should be masked. It continues. It says, in addition to continuing to avoid large size gatherings, the CDC said fully vaccinated people should also avoid medium size gatherings. So small gatherings is what they, small intimate parties, as it were. For the fully vaccinated who do choose to attend a crowded outdoor event, such as a live performance, parade, or sporting event, wearing a mask is recommended. Masks should also be worn in outdoor public settings and venues where they're required. In indoor public spaces, such as a mall, movie theater, or museum, the CDC continues to recommend wearing a mask. In addition, and here's the last directive, the CDC said fully vaccinated Americans who live or work in a group setting, such as a group home or dormitory, no longer need to stay away from others for 14 days if they're around someone who has COVID. They should still get tested, even if they don't have symptoms. So there are the new guidelines, loosened up somewhat. But to be honest with you, when I go out, I'm still going to wear my mask. It's not killing me. And it's not killing you either. Although some people think it is. You know, part of the beautiful thing about what I do is I get to pick and choose what I want to cover, what I want to talk about, what I want to watch on television, what I don't. So it's been nice that since Joe Biden has become president, the former guy I rarely think about anymore. And thankfully, he's off social media, so I don't see him there. Don't see him on the TV I choose to watch because I don't watch Fox, the fake news network. I don't watch Newsmax or OAN or any of that crap. But occasionally, a clip from one of those networks shows up. Such was the case this morning. And I don't know if Tucker Carlson is really this offensive of a human being, or, you know, he does it for the ratings, which frankly is what Bill O'Reilly did. I believe it's what Rush Limbaugh did. I don't believe any of them are as stupid as the character they play on television. I think they realized that they could get rich being an ignorant asshole, and they take full advantage of it. And then I think once you repeat something enough times, you start believing the bullshit. So I think that's where Sean Hannity is now. But Tucker Carlson, well, he's just obnoxious on every front. Back when he was on MSNBC wearing his stupid little bow tie, I thought, this is a smarmy, creepy, whiny guy. And they had an 8 o'clock opening on Fox because, you know, Bill O'Reilly is a predator. And they had to get rid of him. So who else are they going to put in there? Not going to put a woman in there. So they put in Fucker Carlson. And I know what I said. I said it on purpose. Actually, because it's easier to say fucker than Tucker. Because frankly, he is one. Motherfucker. Sorry for those of you who get offended. Anyway. I couldn't even tell you what channel Fox is on DirecTV because I don't go there. But again, his ugly mug showed up all over the interweb this morning because of something really offensive that he said last night. So I thought I would share it with you because it deserves discussion. So I just went through the whole mask thing. I'm fully vaccinated. I still wear a mask when I go out, mostly because I want the other people who aren't vaccinated to wear masks too. But here's Fucker Carlson on the television last night saying, you'll hear what he says. And I'll probably stop it a few times because I have a few choice words to say to Fucker.
We did give in. This grotesque version of Halloween went on for more than a year, and it's still
grotesque
going on.
Grotesque version of Halloween.
Not even Tony Fauci still pretends that masks are medically necessary.
No, he doesn't pretend it. He says it because it's true, because they're a protection from the droplets and the aerosol droplets that people spew when they speak, cough, laugh, sneeze. Get it?
Instead, masks are purely a sign of political obedience, like Kim Il-sung pins in Pyongyang.
Bullshit.
We wear them because we have to. The only people who wear masks voluntarily outside are zealots and neurotics. How neurotic are they? Well, we know. A Pew survey from last March found that 64% of white Americans who classify themselves as liberal or very liberal have been diagnosed with an actual mental health condition.
Oh my God. Hey, fucker. We're not even a quarter of the way through the offensive stuff yet, but I just had to get that out there. Yes, I'm Nicole Sandler. I'm a liberal, and I suffer from depression. Got a fucking problem with that fucker? All right, sorry. Back to the point.
And you see them everywhere when you walk down the street in
masks,
any major city.
Yeah.
If you dare to go on foot from Union Station to the Capitol, for example, in Russia, without wearing a mask, angry Biden voters will snort at you in judgment.
Snort?
How could you? They're saying from behind the gauze. How could you?
I'll snort at
That's
you.
That's the question we should be asking
oh,
of them in
you.
Return. The rest of us should be snorting at them first. They're the aggressors. It's our job
We're
to brush
the aggressors?
Them back and restore the society we
oh,
were born in.
Oh, my God.
In. So the next time you see someone in a mask
oh,
on the
God.
Sidewalk or on the bike path, do not hesitate.
Really?
Ask politely but firmly, would you please take off your mask?
Okay, so I don't think he's serious. I think he's just stirring up shit because that's what he's told to do over at the fake news network. And by the way, if that channel, Fox, not news, were on over-the-air television, they wouldn't be able to call themselves news because TV channels, over-the-air channels, are governed by the FCC. And the FCC does not allow anything to be called news that isn't news. And what they do at this place is they make shit up. They make shit up and they make shit up again.
Your original source for fake news. Fox News. We make shit up.
But just let's get back to it because he hasn't even gotten to the worst part yet. So Fucker Carlson just said, if you see some next time you see one of these liberals walking in outside wearing a mask, snort at them. Tell them politely, please take your mask off. Why does it threaten you, you moron?
Science shows there is no reason for you to be wearing it.
Bullshit.
Your mask is making me uncomfortable.
Bullshit.
We should do that, and we should keep doing it
really?
Until wearing a mask outside is roughly as socially accepted as lighting a Marlboro in an elevator.
You know what? The difference is we have scientists, doctors explaining the science behind it. You're just, you know, listening to the air bubbles in your head, you moron.
It's repulsive.
You're
Don't
repulsive.
Do it around other people.
You're repulsive.
That's the message we should send because it's true.
Ugh.
As for forcing children to wear masks outside, that should be illegal.
Really?
Your response when you see children wearing masks as they
oh
play should be no different from your response to seeing someone beat a kid in Walmart. Call the police immediately. Contact Child Protective Services. Keep calling until someone arrives. What you're looking at is abuse.
Call
it's child abuse,
services?
And you are morally obligated to attempt to prevent it. If it's your own children being abused, then
oh,
act
please.
Accordingly. Let's say your kid's school emailed you to announce that every day after lunch, your sixth grader was going to get punched in the face by a teacher. How would you respond to that? That's precisely how you should respond when they tell you that your kids have to wear masks on the soccer field.
Seriously? That's how you should respond when they tell you your kids have to wear masks on the soccer field. To protect themselves and others, that's what you should do? I'm blown away. He's almost done.
That is unacceptable.
You're unacceptable.
Dangerous, and we should act like it because it is.
Right.
But
okay.
Too few of us have responded like that.
Okay. Shut up. All right. So you want to know what happens when Fucker Carlson, the highest rated host on the fake news network, tells his tells his sycophants to do this, to harass people who are wearing masks? Well, in case you're wondering, this is what happens. This is a video from today of people harassing kids on their way to school wearing masks. Oh my God. They're talking about abortion. They're harassing kids going into an elementary school who are wearing masks. Oh my God. This is the problem. Because you got Fox. Probably all the hosts know better than what they're saying, but they're going for the money and they're lying and they they encourage people to do shit like this. This grown woman and two men standing outside of an elementary school where parents and kids are walking up and yelling at them because they're wearing masks, because they're being responsible. I talk about opposite world all the time. This is it. We are living in opposite world.
Welcome to Opposite World, where in is out and up is down.
That was the original one that used to end with, brought to you by Little Johnny Boner and his really big hammer. Because that's, you know, it's been going on that long, but now it's on steroids. So that's what's going on here. But it goes on like this. They lie about everything to freak their fan base out. So the latest, and we talked about this yesterday with Dave Johnson, the latest is now they're trying to tell you that Joe Biden's new infrastructure plan or his green energy plan, which is all together, is going to make it so you can't eat meat anymore. You can't eat meat anymore?
Say goodbye to your burgers if you want to sign up for the Biden climate agenda.
What?
That's the finding of one study.
That will impact how you eat, including red meat.
Americans would have to cut red meat consumption by a whopping 90%. That means
bullshit.
Only one burger a month.
No burgers on July 4th. No steaks on the barbie.
The elites will find their way to get that ribeye steak if they want to. For the rest of us, it will be let them eat kale.
Is this the kind of bullshit government foretold in a 1973?
Oh my God.
This dystopian movie classic, Soylent Green.
Yeah, I like burgers, and I like my gas-powered car.
On Friday, we told you about a study from the University of Michigan. A graphic and a script incorrectly implied that it was part of Biden's plan for dealing with climate change. That is not the case.
Oh, my God. So, yes, that was a Fox person who finally had to admit, we lied to you. That's not true. They're not going to take away your meat. You might want to take away your meat. I've taken away my meat, but you know, there's nothing that they lie about everything. So before we move along and bring in Desi Doyen, I got one little song to play for Fucker Carlson.
I just need you to shut the fuck up, cause nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up.
I know, you're singing along. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. But sorry, it just ends so suddenly. So that's for Tucker Carlson. For the rest of us, let's talk climate, shall we? And let's talk to Desi Doyen. Joining us on the line now is Desi Doyen. Now, you know, usually I speak with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, but Desi Doyen is the person who does all the work behind the scenes. You actually are the managing editor of the Green News Report, right? What does that entail?
Basically, that is trying to sift through the fire hose of green energy news and policy and politics and everything, and trying to distill it down into a tiny 6-minute podcast that gives you what you need to know and hopefully spark interest in researching these headlines further. And just to say that at our website, greennews.bradblog.com, or you can just go to the main site, bradblog.com, when you click through to any one of our reports, I have a huge section of extra stories that we didn't have time to cover, and it's huge. So you can really do a deep dive and go way down the rabbit hole of all the things that can be done for climate change and energy.
You know, it's funny, Desi, because you said our short 6-minute podcast, and the 6-minute thing at the top of the hour, depending on how you look at it, is either like interminably long or so short that you can't get all the pertinent information in. And you,
yep.
Right? And so today's Thursday, so you have a new episode coming, actually, that just released. But I want to talk to you about the one you did on Tuesday, because you published them on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Because on Tuesday, you dealt with the big climate summit that President Biden convened virtually with representatives, leaders of 40 nations. This was a pretty big deal, wasn't it?
It was a huge deal, actually. And, you know, there's some complaints about, oh, you got all these elites flying everywhere and talking to everybody. But what it actually does succeed in doing is it builds trust. And trust between leaders right now is a really big deal, especially after the U.S. has flaked out so often. I mean, it's like twice now that the United States has ditched a climate agreement, an international climate agreement, the Kyoto Agreement. And then, you know, when Trump pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement, and of course now Biden is back in. But so these kinds of meetings are a really big deal for trust building. So obviously couldn't be done this year. So it was a virtual summit, which was actually a bit more interesting and accessible, I think, to the public. It was nice to sort of sit in on direct little meetings between world leaders and Biden. It was kind of cool because sometimes they'd call him Joe. They'd say, yeah, I spoke with Joe, and I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. So they did cover a lot of stuff, and it was focused primarily, the entire two-day summit was focused primarily on innovation and economic opportunities, because the different assembled leaders all really get the science on climate change, and they're all at different stages of development for their countries, and they all have different needs and different resources available to them, but they do all appear finally to get it, that we've got to act on climate change. Now it's going to be an issue of figuring out how we measure what everybody is doing, how they report it, what we do to make sure that they do it, how do we, you know, ensure accountability for that, and how we bring along the laggards like Russia and Brazil.
Right. Now Russia was there. So Desi, yeah. Earlier you mentioned about, you know, the world leaders flying around on their private jets. Well, this time they didn't because of COVID. It was a virtual thing. So was this just, it was on Zoom and everybody just logged into the Zoom call? How did it work?
It was neat. Like I said, you know, they basically, President Biden and Special Climate Envoy John Kerry, the National Climate Advisor Gina McCarthy, Cabinet Secretaries, they all sat around a big table with a gigantic, you know, 20-foot TV screen in front of them that had everybody in their Zoom box talking to them. So that gives you an idea of what it looked like. And, you know, of course, there were the usual glitches that often happen with Zoom. So that was kind of funny.
You know,
World Leaders as well.
I tried to tune in at the very beginning and pull some audio from it. Kamala Harris spoke and Joe Biden spoke, and the audio was doubled. It was like an echo.
Yeah.
Echo. So, yeah, I kind of gave up quickly, but you say they got that fixed fairly quickly.
Yeah, it took like a few minutes before, I guess, somebody alerted the State Department that, hey, your audio is messed up.
Yeah.
So they finally did. It happened a few more times, but they were much quicker on the draw as far as, you know, fixing it within seconds rather than letting it go on and on and on for 10 minutes. I have no idea what Kamala Harris said. I know it was pretty good from what I could tell, but it was so hard to understand. Oh. I felt bad for her because it was a big debut for her on the world stage, and technical issues messed it up. So,
what a shame. But and after that, after her introductory speech, that she was kind of done. She didn't play a big role in the rest of the weekend.
No, she didn't. It pretty much then went to Kerry and Gina McCarthy to run the whole business. And then, you know, on the second day, I should also note that cabinet secretaries like Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm, Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, the U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai, they ran the second day, and they went even further into innovations that countries are doing right now to fight climate change, but also they talked very extensively about how it was creating an economic boom in their countries to take these actions, because, you know, you have to have people physically do construction, for example, to make your infrastructure more resilient, or to build a new clean energy project. So it was basically a, hey, this really is a great opportunity for jobs. Here's the things we need. And that was the other part of the summit, was different countries talking about, this is where we are, this is what we're doing, here's what we need to move forward. And I think that was, in the end, the best part of the summit was, I think, the U.S. sort of convening this international conversation about where we are and what different countries need in order to make this let's work. And then the U.S. saying, we commit to work with you where you are on what you need.
Wow. And that's a big change, especially, well, most specifically from the last 4 years, where, you know, Trump tried to undo everything that was done in towards the goal of becoming carbon neutral or doing something to mitigate the climate changes. In fact, he went overboard the other way. So it's been a lot of, in Joe Biden's first 100 days in office, reversing the horrific policies of the previous administration.
Yeah, and, you know, we lost 4 years of action in reducing emissions, and we lost 4 years of action in reducing pollution. So, you know, that's the other part of this is how much pollution we can get rid of by acting on climate, and a lot of people who won't die from air pollution if we act on climate.
Right. Now, you mentioned Putin a little while ago and what it would take to get Russia on board. Putin did participate. So was he just there on the first day, too, like the big leaders were there, and then they turned it over to their underlings to participate in the rest of it?
So the first day was basically the world leaders saying, well, here's what we're doing on climate. And, you know, and Putin is a troll. So he was trolling a little bit, saying, you know, noting that, you know, the U.S. is responsible for the vast majority of historical emissions. And that is absolutely true.
Yep.
And he also noted that Russia has really reduced its emissions. He didn't mention that that's because Russia is not that big of an economy, and they also had a huge hit to their economy when they transitioned from, you know, the old USSR, the Soviet regime, to where they are now. So that really shrunk their economy, and shrinking their economy also shrunk their emissions. He also talked about nuclear energy. You know, Russia's a big nuclear energy researcher, and so he talked about how they are moving into more nuclear advanced nuclear research to cut their emissions. But remember, Russia is also a huge oil producer, a huge natural gas producer.
Right.
So I think Putin is trying to have it both ways by trolling the U.S. and say, yeah, we're doing a little bit on climate and on clean energy, but we're not going to change anything about our oil production.
It's great. So there has to be, you know, there has to be more. What did the Pope have to say?
The Pope was just basically saying it is our moral responsibility to address the climate change and the ways that capitalism and globalization have harmed the poorest countries, and protecting God's creation is what we are called to do as Christians, and to protect the poor is what we are called to do as Christians, and the poorest countries did not create this problem of climate change.
Well, that's true.
Countries
Right. And the poor countries are paying the brunt of the price.
Oh, yes. They pay first and worst.
Yes.
Because they don't have the infrastructure to begin with and to deal with climate impacts like extreme rainfall and flooding. They don't have flood controls. They don't really have sewage systems, for example, or clean water drinking systems. You know, there are places, there are entire regions of Africa that are not connected to any kind of formal electric grid at all. So that was a big part of the summit. You know, it was really eye-opening to hear from all of these leaders, like especially leaders in Africa. There were both business leaders and political leaders who spoke at the climate summit, and they talked about the very different position that they are starting from. You know, in Africa, for example, like some 90% of the population does not have access to a formal electric grid. In other words, there are no power plants that extend wires out to where they are. So there are new innovations and new businesses that are cropping up in Africa that are bringing local microgrids, usually powered by solar or wind, to these regions that have no access. So, like, for example, one of the big things that really underscored for me how the divide between rich and poor countries, rich and developing versus developing countries, and how they're at different stages of development. Mm-hmm. So, like, the CEO of Easy Solar, which is located in East Africa, she is building those microgrids for those regions that don't have any. And she said that it's really important to help these countries that are trying to lift their people out of poverty and build infrastructure resilience against the climate impacts that are to come, and then also to pay to grow and build renewable energy projects. And this is all to address a problem that they had nothing to do with creating. And so it's wildly unfair that they are forced to spend all this money when, for example, they don't have any money really or any exports that they can send out to bring in this investment to their countries. So the president of Gabon, for example, noted that 98% of their country, or 88%, I forget the exact amount, is covered with forests. Mm. But their forests aren't worth anything just sitting there. So they have to cut them down in order to be able to sell them, in order to be able to buy food to import to their country, or buy energy to import to their country. So they're talking in these developing countries about how they really need help from the United Nations Green Climate Fund, which is something that the U.S. and developing countries have pledged to put in billions of dollars and to also share clean energy technology for a lower price than, you know, making them sign up for loans and stuff. So this Green Climate Fund is one area where the money gathered by the U.N. goes to help them build new infrastructure that will adapt to the coming impacts of climate change and the ones that we're already getting now. They're also talking about other development investment that will help them deploy renewable energy. And it's really expensive right now with the patents that different countries have. And the way that in the past international finance has worked, it has been requiring these developing countries to take on loans with interest rates have to pay back. And they have nothing to pay it back with. I mean, literally, they're trying to lift people out of poverty and pay the creditors abroad. So they also talked about a need for reforming the international aid and development investment system. So some huge stuff like that. But, you know, one of the things, for example, Norway and Denmark, those leaders came on to talk about what they're doing. They've got, innovation in offshore wind. They're doing a net zero commitment to make global shipping net zero emissions neutral. In Norway, they're already at 50%. Electric vehicles.
Wow.
But versus this, you know, compared to Kenya, where they're trying to build infrastructure, they are already 90% clean electricity because they're lucky, they have lots of hydropower resources.
Wow.
But they're trying to eliminate wood burning and kerosene burning cook stoves.
Oh, wow.
So their goal is to hit 100% clean cook stoves by 2028. And that's a huge comparison to where Norway and Denmark are.
Right.
So it kind of gives you this vast spectrum of what Biden was trying to get everybody to understand, that there's this vast spectrum between where different stakeholder countries are and what they need to get to where we all need to be.
Right. So we all have these different, we're at different places in our development or our move towards cleaner energy. Every country has its own challenges and its own stuff. But now add on top of that, and I don't even know if this was discussed during the summit, because the extra wrinkle in all of this is COVID. You know, you talked about these poor countries who don't have the money to do this, and now they have to deal with COVID on top of it. And many of them don't have the vaccines, don't have the money for the vaccines. They're sort of at the mercy of the rest of the world. And oh my God, I've been watching some of the coverage from India, where they have these giant funeral pyres outside of crematoriums where they're burning bodies just because they're so overwhelmed with them. That can't be great for the environment. Did the topic of COVID come up and how it is impacting our efforts to move towards a cleaner world?
Actually, it did, but not in the way that you might think.
Really?
It was mostly about how COVID taught these different, of the countries that spoke of it, I should say. So of the leaders who spoke of COVID, they talked about how it offered them a chance to look at how their society is arranged, to see how they could make shifts for COVID that actually helps reduce emissions.
Huh.
Like in Paris, for example, the mayor of Paris has actually codified into law the streets that they transitioned to pedestrian streets for outdoor dining.
Right.
And for people to be able to be socially distanced while being outside. And they're going to stick with it.
Good.
Stay with converting these streets to pedestrian only.
Nice.
They're working more towards shifting away from car dependence for every part of life. So that was one aspect from the climate summit that did come out, where these leaders were noting that, hey, we were able to cut emissions. We found that our air was cleaner, our water was cleaner, our roads didn't have quite as much traffic. So we're going to try to figure out how we can take our adjustments and make them permanent.
Interesting.
So that was one of the interesting things that came out of it. Didn't happen with the U.S., of course, because, of course, our politics is stupid. But other than that.
Right. Well, I was wondering if anybody made the observation that when the world was quarantining, all of a sudden the air quality got better, that there was a direct correlation, and that shows how much of an impact we can have by taking our foot off the gas, figuratively and literally.
Yeah, and that is something that is, I think, it's not said enough, that what we really do have to do is we must get off of fossil fuels and we have to phase them out entirely by 2050. So that's the bottom line. There really is no other way around that brick wall. What we're going to be doing is shouting and talking about and hearing a lot of disinformation about, no, we don't need to do that. Oh, we can find a way to make sure that fossil fuels can continue to go. And believe me, there's plenty of propaganda and lots of lobbying going on right now from the fossil fuel industry to try to game the U.S. efforts and also, I guess, Europe's efforts as well to move to net zero emissions by 2050. And really, there is no other way to do it other than keeping as much of the fossil fuels in the ground as possible.
Right. Now, so Desi Doyen is with us of the Green News Report and Brad Blog and the Bradcast. So we know the U.S. is one of the planet's biggest offenders, as is China. Now, we know that Joe Biden has come in and made some great pronouncements and set some lofty goals, moving some of the deadlines back from 2050 to 2030 in terms of cutting our greenhouse gas emissions and other things. I mean, he's put in some lofty goals. Number one is, are they enough? And number two question is, where's China on all of this? Because they're the other world's biggest polluter, right?
Yes, they are. Well, so here's how to think of it. China right now has become, since 2010, the world's largest emitter annually overall. Mm-hmm. The U.S. is the world's largest emitter per person by far, more than any other country by far, even more than the European Union, which is also more than China per person. But we're like four times what China emits per person. And also the U.S., as I mentioned before, the U.S. is the world's greatest, largest historical emitter. We have been emitting CO2 into the environment for decades. And remember, CO2 in the atmosphere is cumulative. It lasts in the atmosphere about 1,000 years. So we have a huge moral responsibility and direct responsibility for the warming that is now, the CO2 that is now in the atmosphere. So China is not actually responsible for as much of it as we are. Going to what China has committed to do, again, we get to the part about China still being in a developing stage. I mean, they do have 1 billion people, but a lot of their people are mired in deep, deep poverty. So they're trying to both do the same thing, to build out infrastructure, which they are doing, to their rural communities. They're working on building renewable energy and clean energy research and development and electric vehicles. China plans to own the global clean tech market and plans to take it from the United States. Huh. So part of what Biden's doing is trying to catch up to China and not let them take over the global clean tech market, because these are innovations that the U.S. created that China has used through various techniques to take what we have invented and sell it back to us.
Right.
So Biden is trying to grab that market share back. And, of course, China is also a huge offender as well. They're still building coal plants.
Oh, wow.
And so now one of the things that the Chinese President Xi Jinping committed to was to phasing out coal.
Really?
And they have said, and it was a big deal late last year when China committed to going to net zero by 2060, which for an economy as large as theirs and a country as vast as theirs with as many poor people as they have, 2060 is doable. It is achievable. And, you know, the thing that they do is the Chinese also tend to set targets that they can easily meet so that they can not ever lose face by not meeting the target. So right. My guess is they're actually going to meet it much earlier than that. But, you know, that's what they've committed to, which is already a big deal. And that doesn't mean that they're perfect by any means whatsoever. It just means that they have what the United Nations calls common but differentiated responsibilities. And that's the way that the United Nations and the diplomats talk about the spectrum of needs across all of these countries, from the poorest countries to the richest countries. They all have a common responsibility, but it's also differentiated for where each country is, what their needs are, how many people they have to lift out of poverty, and what their capacity is, their resources, not just the natural resources, but their capacity to actually pay money to build stuff.
Right, right.
And then you also asked about Biden, and I can't remember what your question was about Biden.
Are we doing enough? Are Biden's goals lofty enough to get us through this and to where we need to be?
So, number one, yes, the 2050 goal can be met if we can meet the cutting emissions in half by 2030.
Right.
There's no question about the baseline, but about where we start from, because Biden has only proposed cutting emissions from 2005 levels. Britain and the EU have talked about cutting their emissions 50% from 1990 levels.
Ooh.
So, you know, Biden, there's definitely a legitimate complaint that what he has proposed is not as ambitious as it needs to be. This is true. But it's about, I think, as ambitious as is politically feasible in the United States. So, you know, technically on a science basis, none of the pledges that have been made by any country under the Paris Agreement are going to be enough to keep us to no more than 1.5 degrees of warming Celsius above pre-industrial levels. But we knew that going into it. We knew that back in 2009 when the agreement was originally signed. It's not going to be enough. But the idea is that if you set this target, then people and governments can try to meet it. If there's no target, there's nothing to meet. There's nothing to try for. There's nothing to measure against. So that's what the goal is right now. Biden's pledges are enough. If we can get to half emissions cuts by 2030, that does put us on the path for net zero by 2050. But we will have to pick up the pace quite a bit. And we do cover that in today's Green News Report.
So good.
The gap between what everybody has pledged versus what needs to happen is not going to get us to net zero 2050 based on where we are today. But, of course, this is attempts to predict the future, and we don't know what kind of innovations are going to come out. And right now, innovations in clean energy and battery technology are just going like gangbusters. So there will be quite a bit of innovation coming up now that all of the focus is on doing that innovation, and now that the money is clearly going in the direction of clean energy. I think that there is quite a bit of hope among climate scientists and climate policy analysts that while the targets aren't enough, by setting up on this path, we will actually get there faster than we think.
Right. And the other thing that I'm guessing, I mean, it's just my educated guess, is that they want to set these goals as something that's attainable. I mean, we watched what Biden did when he came into office with the vaccines. Well, his first goal, 100 million shots in the first 100 days, we were already there. He wants to set goals that are attainable, that seem lofty, but are also attainable so that he has success and he beats expectations. So
exactly. To make sure that it's really super clear here, so it's technically possible with tools that we already have, but not all of the tools are ready in order to be able to get us to net zero by 2050. So some of the tools that we already have that exist are things like direct air capture of carbon emissions. That's literally a machine that sucks the carbon out of the atmosphere and then either liquefies it so that it can be put in other things or used in other industrial processes where it's needed.
Wow.
So that's one aspect, but it's really expensive. expensive right now.
Sure.
So one of the aspects of what the Department of Energy, Secretary Granholm, talked about is how they are going to devote significant research money toward direct air capture. Because on our current trajectory, we're not going to be able to just get there to net zero 2050 by only switching to clean energy and by only reducing our annual emissions. We're also going to have to probably find a way to suck energy, to suck carbon out of the atmosphere.
Right.
You know, tree planting is not going to be enough.
Mm.
There's just not enough land in the world to both feed people and replant enough forests in order to be able to suck all that extra carbon that we've put into the atmosphere over the past few decades. So that's one aspect of the innovation that is coming up. So yes, it is technically possible. The problem is it politically possible?
Well,
and so that's where the U.S. and Australia really have fallen down.
Gotcha. And what, speaking of politics, so let's go there. For the Green New Deal has been proposed, introduced by, I think, AOC and Ed Markey in the House and the Senate. Obviously, Joe Biden is not embracing the totality of it. He's not embracing the name of it. He's not embracing this as a strategy, but he is embracing bits and pieces of what's in it, right? He's working it into his infrastructure bill, which he's calling a jobs plan. I think the genius of the Green New Deal title is it brings it all together. New Deal in terms of recovering from a depression or a recession or a bad economic downturn, in this case, COVID, and just, you know, the general way of our economy, but in a green way. And if we, as we need to transition from fossil fuels to clean energy, that would create a number of jobs and stuff. We've got it, but the fact that Biden won't embrace the Green New Deal, the title, or go there, shows that it's the political side of it. So, Lindsey Graham this week finally admitted, I've come to the conclusion that climate change is real. Well, nice of you to get with the program, Lindsey. How about the rest of the party? Are they finally coming to the realization that this is real?
Okay, so the Republican Party, depends on, of course, who you're talking to. Mm-hmm. There are, of course, the nuts in the Republican Party who don't accept science under any circumstances at all, like Louie Gohmert, for example, of Texas.
Right.
But there are quite a few Republicans who have recognized the validity of climate science all this time and have just been lying this entire time because it doesn't benefit their fossil fuel benefactors. So that is the real issue. They're finally, as predicted, you know, this is, I have to say, this was predicted a while ago by a number of climate commentators, was that once the Republican Party saw the political winds change, once they saw that the public was finally catching on to climate change and the need to take action, then they would say, oh, well, we always believed in that.
Hmm. Of course. Right. Because that's what they do. Right.
But when you have younger Republicans who are now coming in, and some of those younger Republicans are smart enough to see that the political winds have changed and that they will have to come up with something. So, for example, the Republicans in Congress, in the House, presented their own infrastructure bill, and it's like $568 billion, and it covers, you know, the usual hard infrastructure, but it doesn't have anything on climate emissions, and it doesn't have anything on environmental justice.
Hmm.
And that is a huge difference between what Biden is doing, what AOC and the Green New Deal do, versus what Republicans are talking about. So you're right, Biden does not call it a Green New Deal, because obviously that drives Republicans into massive demonization of whatever Biden is trying to do. So I think it's useful that AOC and Senator Ed Markey have presented the Green New Deal as sort of a foil, a stretch goal, a thing that Biden can say, look, see, we're not doing that. It's okay, guys. You can listen to me. We're not doing that Green New Deal thing, even though that's what he's doing.
Right.
So he's not doing all the things of the Green New Deal, but he's doing a lot of them. And he's got a major focus on environmental justice because, you know, people may not know, but most minority communities and communities of color in the United States have a much higher pollution burden than white communities. And that has to do with zoning and cheap land and industries moving into where they're, where the permitting is more permissive from, especially like in places like Texas, where they're like, sure, you got a chemical plant, you want to put it two blocks away from a residential development? Yeah, that's fine. Go ahead. And that has been a problem for decades. So Biden is trying to begin addressing that by, he pledges he's going to put 40% of the spending in the American Jobs Plan and make sure it's directed toward these frontline communities that bear the brunt of pollution. So we'll see what the details actually are on that and if they're actually able to bring it up to 40% or how they're going to have to wheel and deal in there to try to help other communities as well.
Wow.
But Republicans, now that they see that they're going to have to do it, they're going to basically make their role to be delay. So they're going to talk about we need to act on climate change. We've never denied climate change. Sure, we understand their climate right. change, but now we're going to make sure that we make it as slow as possible. So that's kind of where we are and what to expect from them.
So as usual, it's a fight against the elements, but also a fight against the Republicans who keep, you know, who just want to put a hold up against anything, any progress we make towards mitigating the climate crisis or making things better here, you know, improving voting conditions, getting rid of COVID, things like that. It's
on
every front.
And I want to add one more important, really important thing is that just pay attention to how Republicans demonize any action going forward. Their point here is to derail the conversation and to deflect attention away from the fossil fuel industry. So they'll try to blame individuals. They'll try to blame you and all of your actions and say Biden is trying to go after you and the things that you like in your individual life. Important to note, Biden's plans say nothing about individual actions or personal consumption of any kind. So when Republicans pluck out stuff to yell about, what they're trying to do is derail the conversation and deflect attention from the fossil fuel industry.
Wow. Wow. Because, and again, that's the source of a lot of their money. And it always comes back to money, doesn't it? If we could get money out of politics, I'm guessing that working on the climate issues would be a whole lot easier.
Oh, I'm sure it would be because, you know, if you look at public polling, if the public got what they wanted based on public polling, the vast majority of the public, you know, between 65 to 85% of the public, depending upon what you're asking about, they support climate action. They accept that climate science, they accept climate science and they accept the need to do something about it. They like the idea of cleaning up pollution. They want to do these things. They love the idea of the American Jobs Plan. They love switching to clean energy. They love the idea of retrofitting homes and getting ready for these climate impacts that are going to get worse and that we won't be able to stop because we aren't cutting emissions fast enough. So the public loves this stuff. And yes, if we were able to get the fossil fuel industry out of our politics, then we'd be much further along on this. But that's not the world we live in.
No, and it's certainly not the country we live in. So we've got our work cut out for us. Last question for you, Desi Doyen, and this is a personal one. Do you have confidence that we're going to be able to turn things around enough that in your lifetime we will see a change and we will be less concerned about the effects of climate change on the planet?
You know, if you'd asked me a year ago, I would say no.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm actually feeling a bit more positive and optimistic about it now.
Wow.
Because the technological aspects are there. The ability to innovate is there. The capacity to build and develop these technologies that we need is totally there. And I believe we actually can do it. It's just a matter of the politics moving fast enough. I wouldn't have thought that Biden would be able to follow through on his pledges mm-hmm. during the campaign. I thought he was just kind of promising these things and then he would back off and try to let Republicans dictate the terms of the debate.
Right.
He is not doing that. And so when he comes out with a let's cut our emissions in half by 2030, that's actually what the science says to do. You know, he could make it even deeper than that. Instead of making it off of 2005 levels, he could make it 1990 levels. But that said, the fact that he actually said it and put it into his words, and now the different cabinet agencies all this week have been throwing out new policies that they're going to, and new initiatives that they can do under their authority without Congress, stuff that Biden can do under his authority without Congress, all of that stuff they're doing is actually in line to meet the cutting emissions in half by 2030. So it is possible to do it. So I have some optimism. The big drawback, the big scary part, is that these efforts, if the Republicans and right-wing media are able to demonize them effectively, it could create a backlash that causes Democrats to lose this very tiny margin that they have in Congress in 2022. And that, you know, a lot of the stuff that Biden has done won't be reversed unless a Republican gets elected in 2024. So we have those two benchmarks that will kind of determine if we're able to make it or not. So it kind of all depends on the 400-something people in Congress in 2022 and whether Biden retains the White House in 2024 on whether we're actually going to make it.
And who we elect in the midterms in 2022. Right. If we give control of Congress back to the Republicans, we're screwed. So basically, the ball is in our court. We have to do better about getting out and voting and taking control of what's going on. Desi Doyen, thank you so much. I'm going to try to take your optimism with me because I haven't been feeling it. So I will try to go with that and move forward from there.
That's the only way to go.
Yes.
Optimism gets stuff done. Pessimism does nothing.
That's right. You're absolutely right. It won't make anything better. It'll just make us miserable, more miserable than we are. Desi Doyen, find her at on Twitter at Green News Report. Greennews.bradblog.com is where you can get to the Green News Report. And, of course, bradblog.com and the Bradcast, which Desi produces. And I know I'm holding you up and you got work to do. So thank you.
No worries. Thanks, Nicole.
Desi Doyen. She's so sweet. I love Desi. She's the unsung hero of the Brad blog and Bradcast and all that stuff. By the way, she sent me an email. She's like, we ran out of time, but there's this great clip from John Kerry at The Thing. Here's what he had to say at the end.
Because the world as a whole is moving in this direction, because these companies have made this critical, long-term, strategic marketing judgment, no politician is going to be able to change what that market is doing because it will have moved. It'll have 4 years of entrenchment, and those jobs will be there. And people will see that this is the product people want to buy. And they will also increasingly, I believe, more and more convinced by the heat in the summer, by the floods, by the weather, by the intensity of storms, by the rising of sea level, that we got to get moving. And I don't think anybody's going to get back from that fast because we're way behind the eight ball on that. And the chances of seeing more damage before we see the progress is very, very real.
Huh. Interesting. John Kerry. Who knew? All right. We covered a lot of ground today. You know what? One thing we haven't done so far this week, it's only 2 days old, but we haven't had a funny. And we could use one right about now. And with all the talk about people dissing the idea of getting vaccinated, I thought it was time for a song. This is a guy named Chris Mann. I haven't played many of his song parodies, but he's pretty good. And, at the beginning of the pandemic, we had all the My Corona songs. Let's do it again. Ready? Here we go. Here we go.
I need vaccination, vaccination, vaccination. I need a vaccination from my Corona. I need vaccination, vaccination, vaccination. I need a vaccination from my Corona.
Happy anniversary, COVID-19. Why are you still here in my life, Corona? I didn't think you'd stay so long. I've had enough. Take the hint, it's time to say bye, Corona. Yeah, I'm flying fast. Since you came, nothing's mattered. No school and work from home. While I bake sourdough starter and cry, my Corona.
I need a vaccination from my Corona.
When's it gonna be my turn to feel the burn? Hope it's before I go insane, Moderna. Wait until they call my name or call my age. I feel like I'm in the Hunger Games like Peter. 100 million million shots, 100 days. Bring it Biden. Thank God for Dolly Parton for the cure in 95. Come on, Pfizer. Ow! My corona. My corona.
Vaccination.
The head
of vaccination from my corona.
It's on your later. Restaurants are reopening. Oh, like Burger King. Woo! I'll be wearing my mask inside. You betcha. I'm so sick of distancing and Cloroxing. Shit, don't touch that. I'll have to rewind. Corona. Yeah, it's been a lot. 2020 clusterfuck. But now we made it through, and our sleeves are rolling up just in time. My corona. Sick of my corona.
Hey,
my corona.
Woo!
Yeah, goodbye, my corona.
Aha. His name is Chris Mann. Yeah, my corona. And with that, we're done for the day. Thanks for listening, everyone. Tomorrow, Governor Don Siegelman of Alabama will be here. See you then. Bye. Leave me with what's news, okay?
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The U.S. Census Bureau released the first data from the 2020 survey on Monday. It shows three key states that voted for the former guy picking up seats in Congress, while two big states that backed Biden will each lose one. Texas will gain two seats. Florida and North Carolina, along with Montana, Oregon, and Colorado, will get one more seat each. California, New York, Illinois, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia will each lose a seat. The New York Times wrote, "The shift from the Northeast and Midwest to the South and West will shape Congress for the next decade." The adjustments also will boost Republican strongholds in the Electoral College. Overall, the census showed the population growth rate was the slowest since the 1930s. Now, whether that's actually true or just the result of a shoddy Trump-led census that was hobbled throughout and ended early because the administration was tired of counting or some such nonsensical reason, we don't know. And can't find out. And because the census is only taken once every 10 years, we're stuck with this for a while. And by the way, for all the people who refuse to participate in the census, shame on you. New York lost a congressional seat because of 89 people. Seriously. As the nation grapples with a seemingly never-ending series of police shootings of unarmed black men, Attorney General Merrick Garland is stepping up. Just days after proclaiming that the Department of Justice would look into the practices of the Minneapolis Police Department, Garland announced on Monday that the Justice Department will also investigate the Louisville, Kentucky Police Department to determine whether it, quote, engages in a pattern or practice of using unreasonable force. This decision comes a year after officers in Louisville fatally shot Breonna Taylor. She was a 26-year-old medical technician who was sleeping in her apartment when detectives burst in with a no-knock warrant. Taylor's boyfriend fired a gun, fearing intruders, and police responded with a hail of bullets that killed her. No charges were brought against the officers who killed Breonna Taylor. Well, as the president prepares for his first address before a joint session of Congress Wednesday night, a speech that in every year other than a president's first in office is called the State of the Union, the White House has been busy. On Monday, they announced they're raising the minimum wage for federal contractors to $15 an hour. That's up from $10.95 an hour, which is far higher than the $7.25 per hour received by non-federal contractors. But it's even better than that, because this order will index that pay rate for inflation. But wait, there's more. Calling it the nation's largest summer child nutrition effort, the Biden administration also announced Monday that it will expand a key coronavirus aid program to help get food to more than 30 million kids after the school year ends. Eligible families will receive roughly $375 per child. It amounts to about $6.82 per child per weekday, though the total amount could vary if a state opts to use its own schedule. Parents can then use the funds to buy food. Children who are eligible for free or reduced price meals during the school year and those under age 6 whose families receive food stamps qualify for this assistance. And the president will seek $80 billion to fund enhanced IRS enforcement of high earners to help pay for his American Families Plan, which he will unveil later this week. The reasoning behind this is they believe that the enhanced measures to crack down on tax evasion will increase revenue for the government by about $700 billion. An announcement is expected on Tuesday from the White House with new guidelines from the CDC for activities that vaccinated people may resume. This should include recommendations related to healthcare settings and whether to wear masks outdoors. At press time, the language of the new guidance was still being finalized. Stay tuned. Sadly, more guidance is needed to counter the disinformation being pushed by the actual fake news purveyors at Fox, not news.
We wear them because we have to. The only people who wear masks voluntarily outside are zealots and neurotics. How neurotic are they? A Pew survey from last March found that 64% of white Americans who classify themselves as liberal or very liberal have been diagnosed with an actual mental health condition. And you see them everywhere when you walk down the street in any major city. If you dare to go on foot from Union Station to the Capitol, for example, in Washington without wearing a mask, angry Biden voters will snort at you in judgment. How could you? They're saying from behind the gauze. How could you? That's the question we should be asking of them in return. As for forcing children to wear masks outside, that should be illegal. Call the police immediately. Contact Child Protective Services. What you're looking at is abuse. It's child abuse, and you are morally obligated to attempt to prevent it.
Tucker Carlson really said that. So stories like this are sadly not surprising. A very expensive Miami private school has informed employees that if they choose to get vaccinated, they won't be allowed near students. Centner Academy's statement repeated false claims that vaccinated people, quote, may be transmitting something from their bodies, leading to adverse reproductive issues among women. Quote, we are not 100% sure the COVID injections are safe, and there are too many unknown variables for us to feel comfortable at this current time. What? Meanwhile, the White House announced on Monday that we will send other countries our supply of the AstraZeneca vaccine. The Biden administration had already shared about 4 million doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine with Canada and Mexico. Now they're announcing plans to send doses to other countries desperate to step up their vaccination campaigns. After more than a decade, the Supreme Court is taking up the Second Amendment again. This case, which will likely be heard in the fall, centers on the extent to which the Second Amendment protects an individual's right to carry a concealed weapon for self-defense outside their home. A sharply divided Supreme Court in 2008 and 2010 overturned handgun bans in Washington, D.C. and Chicago, redefining gun rights by firmly establishing the right to bear arms as an individual right. Since then, the court's conservative majority has expanded from 5-4 to 6-3. Sadly, we've heard way too much about guns lately, including gun use by those who are supposed to be protecting us. The fatal police shooting of Andrew Brown Jr. in Elizabeth City, North Carolina, was an execution. That was how it was described by his family's attorney on Monday afternoon after they were allowed to watch a 20-second clip from a sheriff's deputy body camera. Members of Brown's family said he was shot as he sat in his car with his hands on the steering wheel. Peaceful protesters have called for the sheriff's department to release the body cam video. The sheriff has said he wants to release the video publicly but needs a court order. Well, a Republican-led effort to recall California Governor Gavin Newsom has enough valid signatures to qualify for the ballot. State officials will determine the cost of the election, which could take 3 months. Once that's all finished, the Secretary of State can certify the recall. The lieutenant governor will call an election within 60 to 80 days. A few Republicans have already said they'll run, including reality television personality Caitlyn Jenner. By the way, recent polls show that 56% of voters are against the recall. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.